Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, happy Saturday, Atlanta. Hour number two, Nick Cale's show as we roll till 6 o'clock tonight. Sarah Spencer covers the Hawks for the AJC. She'll join us coming up in about 20 minutes. Our very own Jarvis Davis in the final hour of the show to talk some Falcons post-draft. And right now, we're taking your Falcons calls, 404-741-0929. And really, if you're just tuning in, we just last segment got into the Falcons for the first time today. Kind of some post-draft commentary on the team and two questions that you can jump in on. Mike Clay from ESPN's NFL staff tweeted out this past week all of the strength of schedules for 2021. And again, we'll find out the exact order of the games to be played on Wednesday night. But the Atlanta Falcons have the second easiest schedule this upcoming season behind only Tampa Bay, which almost seems unfair. And then also, when you look at this collection of skill players now, following Mike Davis in free agency, following Kyle Pitts in the draft, is this group as a collective unit elite enough, like the top three units in the league, top five, something to that effect, where we can overcome some of the deficiencies and at least be in the hunt in the month of December for a playoff spot? 404-741-0929. Let's get to all of your phone calls. And we start in Snellville with Xavier, who's up first. What's going on today, Xavier?
What's going on there, Nick? How you doing?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
All right. I just wanted to say, I don't believe, honestly, we're going to be able to compete. I think typically good playoff teams have a good mixture in between veterans. Great veterans and young players. Right now, our defense and our offensive line are just entirely too young. The Saints, Tampa Bay, they're just too savvy right now. And even Carolina beat us last year. And if he asked me, they drafted pretty well. So I think we still got at least another year or two to go.
I'm with you on the Carolina drafted pretty well, but don't forget, Drew Brees is gone. So, you know, I mean, I know the Saints have a really damn good roster, but let's not diminish Drew Brees just riding off into the sunset like they've got another Drew Brees lined up.
That is very true. I feel like that defense still might be able to overcompensate for Drew Brees being gone, though.
All right. Appreciate the call, Xavier. Thank you very much
for
checking in. I saw this come out from CBS Sports on Twitter a day ago. Players with at least 55,000 yards passing and 300 passing touchdowns in their first 13 seasons in NFL history. Matt Ryan, end of list. And how about this? To the point with the defense, here's the negative. The Falcons' defense, the last three seasons, in points per game allowed, 26 points per game. That ranks 25th out of 32 teams. Total yards per game allowed, 380. That ranks 28th out of 32. Passing yards per game, 266. That ranks last. And sacks, the last 3 years, 94 total sacks. That ranks 30th. So 25th in points, 28th in total yards, last in passing yards, and 30th in sacks. Guys, if our defense wasn't abysmal, we're a playoff team virtually every year. Can Dean Pease take that 25th, 28th, 30th, and 32nd and make that like 20th, 18th, 16th, and 12th? If he can do something to that effect with all the weapons, I mean, then 10 and 7's in play? 9 and 8? Remember, 18 weeks, 17 games this year. 404-741-0929. Frank in Cumming is up next. Good afternoon, Frank. What's going on? Hey, Frank? He's there. I hear him. He's breathing. Frank.
Yo.
Frank. Yeah, Frank, we got you. Go ahead.
This is actually Xavier in Loganville, brother.
Okay. All right. My fault, man. It said Frank and
Cumming. You had two Xaviers. It's
gotcha.
Okay.
There
What's
up, man?
There was two Xaviers on the line.
Go ahead.
So basically, the way I've been looking at it is everybody's looking at the glass half empty. I'm looking at it from the standpoint of I look at this team from what we saw when they were at their best. I will never, ever overlook the fact that we were a dropped interception away from holding Kansas City to their lowest offensive output of the season. Okay, nobody gives us credit for that, and that's with an ineptitude of coaches on the staff.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had any coaches with half a brain in a lot of those games that we blew, then obviously this team, it's not about having the better players every game. If that was the case, Tom Brady would never have lost a game in his career.
True.
Or Aaron Rodgers or a lot of these elite, quote-unquote, teams wouldn't lose any games. It's not always about that. It's about who's the best on Sunday, whose game plan is the best. So if we had better game planning and better coaching decisions being made, we could beat a lot of those teams because we do have talent that trumps some of those decisions. But then sometimes they just make decisions so bad that our talent doesn't show through in those waning moments that win or lose you the game. Like they say, it's only two or three moments that win or lose you the game. And mostly that's down to coaching decisions. It's got to do with talent, but our coaching failed us on so many occasions that it made us look so bad. Even with the ineptitude, we had the opportunity to probably win six more games than we did.
Okay,
and we had coaches.
Here's the question I have for you. So we're talking about the changes of the coaches with Arthur Smith and Dean Pease. Do you think with those two guys, when we have leads and we get to the fourth quarter this year, we'll hold on to them? Or are the blown leads in part because of Matt and the defense, and it's just in the core players' DNA not to close out games? Which way are you leaning?
I'm going to lean on them closing. I mean, I look at the run game that was implemented in Tennessee. I look at Ray Lewis talking about Dean Pease and everybody from Tennessee talking about Dean Pease. You know, his track record is that he gets results. And we saw what happened in Tennessee, the track record. You hear Harry Douglas talking, he gets results. So, I mean, we have more talent at the wide receiver spot right now than they had in Tennessee. But he had those guys looking amazing. And then with Kyle Pitts, if he's this unicorn everybody's talking about, then we have the best tight end in the division also. Gronk is like 50 years old, so I don't even consider him a weapon anymore. So those two or three waning moments, I have confidence in our coaches now. They have more talent probably now than they've ever had. So as far as offense, so I don't see them being able to blow that. And Kyle Pitts is our problem is solved in the red zone now. Since Julio is getting 8-man coverages supposedly in the red zone and we can never get him the ball, just throw it to freaking Kyle Pitts, man. That's what I say.
All right, Xavier, thank you for checking in. We appreciate it. 404-741-0929. Well, I can't wait to see the jump ball fade to Kyle Pitts or the back shoulder fade on the pylon to Kyle Pitts inside the 5-yard line. Now, full disclosure, if they try that two or three times and come up empty, I'm going to be on Twitter yelling, you should have gave the ball to Mike Davis, blow people off the line of scrimmage, punch it in. But, you know, that's quarterback. That's armchair quarterback on social media at its best. Let's get some more calls. 404-741-0929. Billy is on 285, and he's up on 92.9. What's up, Billy?
I'm still on 285, but I want to tell you this. There is no way Julio's going anywhere, man. This is the best receiving core that Arthur the coach or Arthur the owner have ever had. our offensive line will be just fine. The problem with the Falcons is going to be if they do not win 5 of their first 10 games, we've got to move Julio and this new boy Kyle Pitts to safety. One of the two. They're going to have to play both ways. That's the whole thing because our cornerbacks have got to step up.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, Billy. I appreciate the call. You'll probably be on 285 for a long time. Unfortunately, not many guys in the NFL play both ways anymore. We don't have too many Chuck Bednariks roaming the National Football League, but you're right. I mean, if we're going to sit there and rank the things that need to get better, you know, this year compared to last year that we have the most confidence in, I mean, I'm probably going offensive line number one because we're probably going to see more two tight end sets, which means we should be inherently better running out of that personnel with Mike Davis. And then after that, I mean, as bad as Dante Fowler was, is he really going to be as bad as he was last year? I can't see that happening, even though he's been kind of up and down, hit or miss. Remember, when he got drafted by Jacksonville, blew his knee out his first training camp, and then had some success next to Calais Campbell and a few others. And then he went to the Rams, and he had success, but it felt like, you know, success by association with guys like Aaron Donald. I got to think the pass rush will be a little bit better this year, even if Dean Pease has the blitz 5 and 6. I think you're right. I think the biggest question is the secondary. They have got to find a way to be just respectable, just commendable. Like, they just can't get barbecued on a weekly basis. 404-741-0929. Let's try Danny, who is next. Danny, you're on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Danny, you go ahead.
Hey, Nick. Hey, I think our biggest issue is going to always be defense. It's been defense since Mike Smith was there. Mm-hmm. It's been defense since this guy from Seattle was just there. Like, it's always going to be defense. Our offense is never going to be the problem. And I think we're going to keep Julio because Arthur Blank has let us know that he loves Julio. Julio isn't going anywhere. So they're going to figure the cap out. Julio's going to be there. We're going to score 100 points. And hopefully we can get one stop because that's all we've ever needed with the Falcons. Mm-hmm. One stop. Yep. That's it. If we can get one stop, we will win games. And hopefully Dean Pease can figure that puzzle out for us to be able to get one stop. Because our offense, I don't see anybody stopping our offense. I mean, if you look at all the pieces that we have, like, who's going to stop that offense?
Mm-hmm. No, so, nobody. I mean, you know, it's hard, and I appreciate the call. You know, it's so hard in this day and age to stop any offense. But here's the double-edged sword, though, with getting that one stop you alluded to. You know, how do you get it? Because if you can't generate pressure with your front four, with Grady Jarrett, Marlon Davidson, Dante Fowler, Tuioti Mariner, whoever, whatever combination of guys we're going to see on that front three or front four, if you can't get there with four and drop 7 in the coverage, well, then you got to play the numbers game. And then you got to bring 5. And if 5 doesn't get there, you know Dean Pease, he'll blitz any single player from any single angle. He'll bring 6. He'll bring 7. But I got to tell you, if it's a six-man blitz, if it's bringing all 7 and playing 4 across, man across the back, I'm petrified. I do you trust any of these guys in the secondary one-on-one with Dean Pease bringing 6 or 7 guys? I mean, you'd like to trust A.J. Terrell if he gets there. I mean, he's got the pedigree. He's the guy that's got to take the biggest step in year two. He has got to become a very viable corner. Doesn't have to be Jalen Ramsey. He doesn't have to be Patrick Peterson. He doesn't have to be the Honey Badger before he went from corner to safety. But he's got to show us significant steps of improvement this year. 404-741-0929. Let's get one more call. We'll do more Falcons calls, by the way, coming up at 5 o'clock today. Frank is back on the line. Frank, you're next. What's going on, Frank?
Hey, but appreciate taking my call. Again, I love the way, you know, you break down the schedule in quarters. And if you truly look at it, you know, I'm thinking 5 or 6 wins. And here's why. Since the Super Bowl, the Falcons can't run the football. And they don't run the football in the red zone. Now, mm-hmm. part of that is play calling. But at the end of the day, and I know it's a new coaching staff, it's a new system, they have to prove it to us. So why is everybody thinking this offense is so unstoppable? We know the defense has holes, but you got to be able to run the football in the NFL, especially in the red zone. And we haven't proved that we could do that yet.
Yep.
So until we fix that, I don't see how anybody sees us winning more than 5 or 6 games, 1 or 2 games in the division. We got to fix the running game.
All right. Appreciate the call, Frank. And I'll tell you this, having covered Arthur Smith with the Tennessee Titans for 2 years in Tennessee, look, yeah, he ran the ball tremendously because they had a good offensive line. They had a great running back named Derrick Henry. We don't have either one of those in Atlanta. The offensive running game should be better because, well, we don't have Todd Gurley anymore in his arthritic knees. But Arthur Smith is going to go with what works. He's not going to try to jam a square peg into a round hole. So if this team can't establish the ground game, trust me, he's not going to stick to it. He's not stubborn. He will go with what works. If that means Matt 42 times, then so be it. All right, coming up next, and by the way, more Falcons calls coming up at 5 o'clock. But up next, we got to get to the Hawks. 4 games left in this 72-game slate. Can we avoid the 6th seed? Sarah Spencer from the AJC, next. All right, halfway home on a Saturday as we roll till 6 o'clock. We'll get back to some Falcons coming up in about 20 minutes. Jarvis Davis, 1 hour from now. And also, we will get into a little college football post-spring game action. Jimbo Fisher clearly has lost his mind. We will explain in just a little bit, but right now let's talk about our Atlanta Hawks on the road to the playoffs. And here to break it down, the great Sarah Spencer, who covers the Hawks for the AJC. And she's with us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Sarah, we appreciate a couple of minutes on a Saturday. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing excellent. Maybe not as good as the Hawks. They had a better week than I did. They won 3 of 4. A lot of things I want to get into, but most notably, I just saw that you had tweeted out within the last hour or so some stuff from Nate in regards to DeAndre Hunter. So give us the latest update on DeAndre Hunter and his return.
Yeah, so basically kind of the last step that players take before they return to the court is normally playing 5-on-5 and just full-on scrimmaging, getting some live work, some stuff with contact, and he was able to do that today. So that's a really good indication that he could be back pretty soon. So tomorrow they're not going to do much live, but they're still going to do kind of a regular team practice without scrimmaging. So if he's feeling good, he'll participate tomorrow. If he's still feeling good, he'll do the walkthrough Monday. If he's still feeling good, then he might be a game-time decision for Monday's game versus the Wizards. So that's a really good sign for both Hunter and the Hawks that he was able to do 5-on-5, that he's progressed to that point. And it honestly is going to come at a pretty good time if that is the case, because it's going to be good for the Hawks if he can come back for a little bit of the regular season. It would kind of be tough for your first game back to be a playoff game. So it'll be good for both team chemistry and for just him, for DeAndre Hunter, just kind of ramping up to get a few games in the regular season before playoffs. And obviously, as he ramps up, I mean, he was probably one of the most consistent best players on the team before he got hurt. So this is just a good sign all around.
You alluded to one of the most consistent and better players on the team. And your quote that you tweeted out from Bogey was interesting because I agree with it. Like, it's so weird because Trey's obviously a star. He's the headliner. John Collins is in pursuit of a max contract. And there's so many other talented players. But before that injury, and you can allude to Bogey's direct quote, it really is true. I mean, he was the best player on the team. And it might not just be about a points per game standpoint, but it really felt like he was.
Well, yeah, and I think a big thing with how DeAndre was playing, first off, at the beginning of the season is when Trey had a little bit of a shooting slump, which obviously he's pulled out of. But yeah, so I think at the beginning of the season, he was certainly one of their most important players for a couple different reasons. A few things that the Hawks were having problems with and they needed to fix, DeAndre kind of fixed them on his own this season, being another guy who can kind of get to his own shot, being another shooter, another scorer. And being a guy who defensively had taken a big step forward as well. So when the Hawks added Clint Capella and when DeAndre Hunter started playing the way he did, that right there, they never cracked top 10 in defensive rating, but they were getting up there. And a big reason is because you had DeAndre playing well defensively in addition to Clint. So there's just a few different categories that they needed help with that he himself really kind of fulfilled. So I think it'll be big for them to get him back, just because he can do so many things. He meets so many needs for them at the same time.
Sarah Spencer joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I was listening to some of Trey's post-game press conference stuff today, and I thought it was interesting. He talked about having guys that are more vocal on this team this year. And, you know, there's a lot of different leaders. They come in all different sizes and shapes. Some do it by example. Some are more outspoken. As far as the vocal standpoint and aspect of this team, who are some of the guys that have kind of taken that vocal leadership role this year?
Well, I think Clint has been big for them. I mean, obviously, he's been huge in so many ways, whether it's protecting the rim, rebounding, just kind of being that defensive presence. But also, you got to remember, a lot of the Hawks' core is still very young. A lot of these guys are still, you know, 22 years old, and this is the first time they're playing meaningful basketball late in the season. And that's a very different story. You know, there's a lot of different things to handle. You look at the Hawks' final four games of the season, and they have a pretty easy schedule, but you have to have the maturity to understand that you're going to get every single one of those teams' best shots because those guys don't have anything to lose. So as far as who's kind of been that vocal leader and that's kind of behooving the Hawks right now, I think Clint would definitely be up there because you have a guy who has playoff experience. You have a guy who's been in some really important, you know, pivotal situations with the Rockets, who's a little bit older, who can come in and say, guys, you know, we have to play every single game like it's a playoff game, like with a playoff mentality, because if you slip now, like this is the opposite of when you want to slip, you know, you do not want to let off the gas at all. So I think Clint has definitely been really big for them, in that role, this season.
Can you put into perspective or quantify the significant difference it would be for this team, you know, to finish in the 4-5 spot and play the New York Knicks in the first round, as opposed to dropping down to 6 and then either getting Milwaukee or Brooklyn, those two teams currently tied for the second seed? To me, it feels like, hey, if we get the Knicks, we can beat them in the first round. Whereas if we get Brooklyn or Milwaukee, I feel like we're swept or we're out in 5.
You know, it's not an easy matchup, not at all. I mean, the Knicks left the Hawks in the regular season. But I think just overall, the top three teams in the East, they've been the top three pretty much all season. There's so much separation between Philly and Brooklyn and Milwaukee and the rest of the East. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at the East, there's been three or four teams that have been kind of in the basement all season. Those three teams have been far and away ahead of everybody all season. And then it's kind of been a race to the middle. The middle has been so jam-packed. So if you're the Hawks at this point, you definitely want to get the best matchup possible, especially considering this is going to be your first time in the playoffs since the 2016-17 season. You want to set yourself up for success as much as possible. You want to make it easy on yourself, especially when right now you're in the position to do that. You're in the driver's seat as far as at least staying in that 5 seed. So all you got to do is stay there. You know, they're in control of their own destiny. I definitely think it would be disappointing to have to play, you know, the 3 seed. I definitely think it'd be disappointing for them to fall to 6 because it's in their control to stay where they are.
Right.
So you want to set yourself up for success.
You know, you look at it, the logjam 4-7, the Knicks currently the 4 seed, they're a half game up on us. We're a half game up on the Heat for the 6 seed, and then the Celtics are a game and a half back of us. They sit at the 7 seed. We have 4 games left as opposed to New York with 5. Miami has 5, and Boston has 5. As far as I know, you alluded to the controlling your own destiny thing. I'm not sure if you've looked at the schedule for those remaining teams, kind of all jumbled 4-7. But how would you handicap the race down the stretch between those 4?
Well, so Miami and Boston play each other a few times, and obviously the Hawks have the tiebreaker over both Miami and Boston. So that's real convenient right there, and that just goes to show you that every game really does matter, even if it doesn't feel like it matters. So that really helps them a lot. And then New York actually has a pretty tough schedule their last five games. Like, I think they play both L.A. teams. I think they play Clippers, Lakers. They've got the Celtics as well. So the Hawks are kind of in a decent position in the sense that everybody else that's right around them in the standings is going to kind of play each other. So that might help you as far as wins and losses go. And then the Knicks have a tough schedule remaining as well. But again, you know, so the Hawks play the Wizards twice. Obviously, Russell Westbrook has been playing really well. And then they've got Orlando and then they got Houston. All four games at home. So logistically, that helps you for sure, even just in the sense of, you know, you're sleeping in your own bed at night. Mm-hmm. But it's also tough because you can't let down. And again, when you're playing teams who have nothing to lose, you're going to get their best shot every single time. So I think this is when, you know, you got to show some maturity and growth and buckle down and control what you can control and kind of clean up these last four games.
Some closing moments here. Sarah Spencer, she's joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. You know, when we look at this NBA playoff format, the whole play-in tournament, the 7 through the 10 seeds, May 18th through the 21st, I know LeBron has come out. He criticized it this past week. I totally agree with him. I just don't understand what they're trying to accomplish with this, especially from the standpoint of, like, historically in the NBA playoffs, we don't see a ton of 7 and 8 seeds pulling first-round upsets. So why open it up further? Has there ever been any explanation from the league? And what are your thoughts on this format?
Well, basically, what I think they're trying to do is incentivize teams late in the season. You know, because you do see a little bit less. It's not exactly tanking, but you do see a little bit more of those teams who are a little bit out of, you know, the 8 seed. You do see a little bit more of, you know, jockeying for position and it gives you a way to extend your season, even if you are the 9 or the 10. If you're the 7 or 8, you're obviously pretty angry that you normally you would be locked in. And, yeah. You know, now you have to play more games. But they're trying to incentivize teams late. They're trying to increase competition that last month or so. You know, I can see both sides of it. I originally really liked the idea of the play-in tournament, and I still like the idea of it because I do like what they're trying to do. I think, though, this season is a tough time to implement it because you have teams playing every other day. You have everyone, you know, waking up at 8 a.m. to test every morning for players. This season has just been really tough for players from a logistics standpoint. You know, you don't really get the break in between games that you sometimes do. You're still playing back-to-back. Like I said, you're still getting up early. Mm-hmm. So the idea of teams, you know, the regular season being over and still having to play one or two more games and then you go to the playoffs and, you know, everyone is already so worn out. I could see how players and coaches and teams would be disappointed by that. So I like the idea of it. I like incentivizing teams late, but I understand how that's a real tough pill to swallow if you're one of the teams to play in that tournament, which is why the Hawks really need to make sure they can avoid it.
Yeah, for sure. Sarah Spencer from the AJC, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time, and thank you for popping on.
Thanks so much.
You got it. Sarah Spencer with us here on the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer. If I was an NBA owner and my franchise was in that, you know, 9 or 10 spot, you know, with 2 weeks to go, and there was a can't miss player in the draft, I would tell my coach, I'm telling you right now, you get into the playoffs as a 9 or a 10 seed and cost me a lottery spot, or you cost me a better chance, you know, at getting this guy in the draft, I will fire you immediately. Do not even waste your time with these ridiculous NBA play-in tournament. I think it's an awful idea. Terrible. All right. Coming up next, we'll get back to the Atlanta Falcons. I thought about leading the show with this earlier today when I was getting ready, but I didn't lead with it because I don't think it will come to fruition. But there are a few exceptions, and there's a small sample size of where it pays dividends. We'll give you the details coming up next. Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. All right, welcome back in. Good to have you guys aboard here on a Saturday. We'll talk to Jarvis Davis on all things Falcons coming up at 5:20. That'll lead you right into the show with Jarvis and Tanitra. That's coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. Okay, two things here. I need 5 minutes of serious conversation on a quarterback, and then I need about 5 or 6 minutes on television. We'll explain in just a few minutes. But I was thinking about this a couple of days ago, and you know, I thought about leading with it to start the show, but we had Joe Patrick coming up in the second segment, so I didn't want to get into it right away and then have to pivot to baseball. So I was thinking about this, right? Because you know, about 10 days ago, the Atlanta Falcons had one quarterback on the roster. His name is Matt Ryan. And then, about a week ago, the Atlanta Falcons signed A.J. McCarron to be his backup. Journeyman in the NFL since 2014. The definition of a clipboard carrier, a backup. You know, second string, third string, he's never really going to be anything more than that. And that's just fine. You know, great college career, but he is what he is coming out as an Alabama quarterback. Back before Alabama got the elite quarterbacks and was zipping it all over the lot and putting up 48 points a game. And then the Atlanta Falcons signed undrafted free agent quarterback Felipe Franks. Yes, that Felipe Franks, formerly of Florida. And then he transferred because Kyle Trask took over as the starter. And then Franks went to Arkansas and played last year. And it got my wheels churning. And I'm not saying that this is going to happen. In fact, the odds imply that it's got virtually of no chance of happening. But is it possible? And the other reason I'm thinking about this is because, look, a lot of us wanted Justin Fields. A lot of us wanted the quarterback to be Matt's successor in the next couple of years. Didn't happen. And we know A.J. McCarron will not take over for Matt Ryan at any point. But what about Felipe Franks? I mean, this is a pedigreed, I believe, former high four-star or five-star recruit that was recruited by Dan Mullen, went to the Swamp, was the starter over Kyle Trask, won the quarterback battle in Gainesville a couple of years ago, ultimately ended up being, I don't know if he was benched or if he was hurt. I remember he did take a couple of shots. I think he got hurt. In came Kyle Trask, and 2 years later, Kyle Trask never looked back and was in the Heisman race this past year. But if you look at Felipe Franks, he's not a bum. I mean, this kid has some pedigree. He's got a lot of the prerequisite skills. And I'm just going to go through, and I'm reading this directly from 24/7 Sports, which is owned by CBS. In 8 games this season, Franks threw for 2,000 yards, 17 touchdowns, to only 4 interceptions for Arkansas. Completed 68% of his passes, which made him one of the most efficient quarterbacks in the SEC. And in his career, 36 games, 3 seasons in Gainesville, 1 in Fayetteville. He threw for 6,600 yards, 55 touchdowns, 21 picks, completed 61.5% of his passes. Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network said that he liked what he saw in Franks once he became a Razorback, went on to improve. He's got a live arm. Decision-making got better. Probably would end up going in the late rounds. He did not. He was undrafted. But he reminds Daniel Jeremiah of a Derek Anderson-type player that went in the 6th round, and there might be something there. So it got me thinking. And again, probably a 99% chance it never happens, much less in Atlanta. But what, I mean, what just, you know, is it remotely possible that Felipe Franks, who right now he's the 3rd-string quarterback, you got Matt, you got A.J. McCarron, is it possible that learning for 2 or 3 years, assuming he stays on the roster, you know, whether it's practice squad or active roster, could end up becoming a viable option to be the next Falcon quarterback? So I was thinking, how many undrafted quarterbacks in the NFL ended up on a team and materialized into a starter? whether that's Hall of Fame, Pro Bowl, Elite, All-Pro, middle of the road, just a Kirk Cousins. And there are a few. Jeff Garcia, Tony Romo, Kurt Warner, and perhaps the greatest undrafted free agent quarterback of all time, Warren Moon. Now, look, those are four guys out of, I don't know, 38,622 that were undrafted quarterbacks that became something. But I'm just looking at it from what I've seen from Felipe Franks at the highest of levels in college, for Dan Mullen in Florida, for 1 year at Arkansas, who's going to learn behind a Hall of Fame potentially bound quarterback in Matt Ryan. And Felipe Franks is 6'5 and a half, 240. He's got a live arm. He's got mobility. I mean, he beat out Kyle Trask, so there's something there. I think it's interesting to contemplate. I mean, there's been some other really great gems found that were undrafted free agents recently in the NFL. Antonio Gates, James Harrison, Wes Welker, Arian Foster, Priest Holmes, Rod Smith, Jeff Saturday, London Fletcher, Adam Vinatieri. Look, 99.5% chance. I'll just throw out a random percentage. Felipe Franks never becomes anything in the NFL. But I do think, having played where he played, having accomplished, you know, what he did in the SEC, who knows? Crazier things have happened. Well, that was pretty interesting. Okay, now let me get to television. Tomorrow is Mother's Day. It's Mother's Day weekend. You're welcome, scumbags, for forgetting. Yes, yes. Thank you, Nick. I totally forgot. It's all good. Get mom something special. But I was thinking about this, and maybe we could do a poll question, Garrett, on Twitter, or just an open-ended question on Twitter. Who is the greatest TV mom of all time? I've got four. I'm going to throw them out to you. Now, Garrett, you are, I think you're definitely younger than me. How old are you, Garrett?
Just turned 26.
Okay, you're 26. I'll be 38 in a couple of months, so I got you by about 11 and a half years. So here are my four greatest television moms. No specific order, just the character they played, and if you were attractive, that helps as well. Number one, Suzanne Summers from Step by Step, Carol Lambert. By the way, Suzanne Summers is like, I don't know, I'm going to guess in her 70s, still looks like she's in her 50s. She just doesn't age. It's unbelievable. But Suzanne Summers, Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show, Peg Bundy from Married with Children, and Marge Simpson from The Simpsons. Yes, I went animated. Animated television series is acceptable. So I got Peg Bundy, Married with Children, Suzanne Summers from Step by Step, Marge Simpson from The Simpsons, Claire Huxtable from The Cosby Show. My four greatest TV moms of all time. 26-year-old Garrett Chapman. Do any of those shows, maybe short of The Simpsons, resonate with you?
Yeah, I got a couple of them. But okay. What about Kitty Foreman?
Kitty Foreman?
From That 70s Show?
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
No, Kitty Foreman was awesome. That's the show with Ashton Kutcher?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's actually the show where he and Mila Kunis, that's where they met, actually. But
good work by them.
Yeah, good job.
All right. I'm going to go, what about this? We got to go back to the 60s, 70s, well before both of us, but Carol Brady from the Brady Bunch?
Oh, 100%. Now, short you have list. To include her.
Okay. Anything else stand out?
Lois Griffin, maybe?
Lois
Animated, I don't know.
Griffin.
Peter Griffin, the Family Guy.
Okay. All right. I'm looking through this list here. I found this on one of these pop culture magazine websites. You've got Mrs. Cunningham from Happy Days, well before my time. I never watched Everybody Loves Raymond, but Doris Roberts as Mary Barone. I don't know if Everybody Loves Raymond is in your wheelhouse. Not my type of show.
I remember it being on television. I don't really remember enjoying it per okay. se. It was all never right. something. I mean, it was fine. It was more just background noise, I guess.
All right. Lois from Malcolm in the Middle. Ooh. See, Malcolm in the Middle was not a show for me either. That was like early, mid-2000s.
See, I like Malcolm in the Middle. I enjoyed that one. Yeah.
Now, here's, you talk about Peck Bundy from Married with Children, but once Al Bundy and that show disintegrated, you know, Ed O'Neill got his career rejuvenated with Modern Family. Claire Dunphy, who I believe is Sofia Vergara, yeah, she's qualified, put it that way. That 70s show, you mentioned Kitty Foreman on this list, would be number 12. Let's see if there's anybody else that stands out from a TV mom standpoint. Leave It to Beaver, but my God, that's John Chuckery's wheelhouse back in the day. Let me see. Anybody else am I missing? Friday Night Lights, no. Family Ties. I Love Lucy, but that's like 100 years ago. The Partridge Family. And that silly bus and that little redheaded little punk on the TV show. I never liked him. Is there anybody else that stands out?
What about Modern Family? Gloria?
That's what I just mentioned.
Oh, okay.
That's Sofia Vergara.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, right. I'm going to throw another one in. Very underrated. Was not the star of the show by any stretch. But Harriet Winslow on Family Matters was very good. Putting up with Steve Urkel's nonsense. The Addams Family, can't go there. I think that's pretty much it. Bewitched, that's not for me. Dallas, certainly respect the history of the show, but not for me. So here's what we'll do. Garrett, you've got control of the Twitter. If you want to throw up a poll question with three options as well as an other option, and then if people want to vote other and then tweet us their mention, they can do it. The best TV mom of all time. In honor of Mother's Day and Mother's Day weekend. At 929 The Game on Twitter, at Nick Kale. All right, we got a big final hour coming up. We've got Jarvis Davis at 520. We're going to get to Jimbo Fisher in the final segment of the show. But if you guys want to jump in on the Felipe Franks conversation or the TV Moms nomination conversation, you can do so right now. We'll open up the phones. Open phones when we come back. Felipe Franks, best TV moms. If you got a Braves or a Hawks thought, you can jump in. Open phones, 404-741-0929. We'll take some calls coming up next. Stay there.